Hey guys, welcome to True Crimes and Weird Times. I'm Kim.
And I'm Ashley, and I have quite a doozy for you today. Today I'm going to be telling you about the story of Ellen Greenberg, a 27-year-old teacher who was found in her apartment with multiple stab wounds, but whose death was ruled as a suicide. Okay, so I wanted to do this one because there is kind of a minor update, and I haven't heard this one before. So if you've heard this one, enjoy the show anyway.
I don't know if enjoy is the right word.
You're not going to enjoy it, but
you can listen.
You can listen. Ellen Ray Greenberg was born June 23rd, 1983, and was an only child to parents Joshua and Sandra, also known as Sandy Greenberg. They were a super tight family. They lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Ellen was known as a daddy's girl. She would go to sporting events with him often. She seemed to be really well loved. Everyone adored her. Her best friend Debbie says that Ellen was, quote, always smiling and totally a girly girl. A coworker, Amy, says that she was, quote, always so happy and had an infectious smile that could just light up a room. And if you look at pictures of her online, like, she's always smiling. She looks really happy. She's full of life. If you look at her obituary page, there are comments online from friends and family and even, like, old first grade students that were in her classroom about just how much they loved her. Like, she was really loved.
Oh, that always kind of makes it worse.
Yeah, right. Now, she originally went to Penn State to get a degree in communications to become a speech pathologist. But she decided that instead she kind of wanted to be a teacher. And friends and family weren't surprised by this at all. They said that Ellen was always amazing with kids, knew that she would do really great at this job. Like, they were in full support of this. So she went back to school at Temple University in Philadelphia and got her teaching degree. She began her first job as a first grade teacher at Juniata Park Academy. Sorry if that's wrong. In Philadelphia. Ellen met Sam Goldberg through a mutual friend, and they dated for about 3 years until he proposed on a California vacation on the beach, and their wedding was set for August 13th, 2011.
Aww.
Yeah. So all in all, I mean, she was a really great person. She had what seemed to be like a really great life. She had it all.
Everything was going pretty good.
Everything was going good. However, a couple of months before her death, Ellen's demeanor seemed to change. Parents said they watched as their smiling, bubbly daughter started to become stressed out, anxious, like her whole demeanor just changed. Even one of her best friends, Debbie, said that she went from being, quote, one of the happiest people I knew to just filled with anxiety.
Oh.
Now, when asked what was wrong, Ellen would simply say, you know, just stressed out about work. She was just really vague about what was wrong. And Debbie states that if I asked her anything, there would be a long silence. Like, she just didn't want to talk about it.
Man, that goes back to, like, the Cynthia Anderson case we just covered. Like, if something is going on, tell somebody. Write it down. Do whatever. Let someone know. Yeah.
Even if it's, like, feelings you're having, like, something's going on at home, if it has to do with people, like, you got to talk about it.
Yep.
Yeah. A coworker, Amy, said that Ellen did have some tough kids in her class, but, like, didn't seem any more stressed out than any other teachers. Like, rough kids are hard. It's draining. And it can make you anxious.
I bet. I was supposed to be a teacher. I spent 3 days observing at the end of my first year of college and realized very quickly that this was not for me.
Yeah, you have to be in it for...
Yeah.
Whew. But at this time, you know, she was teaching. She was trying to plan a wedding. Just life in general was happening. She mentioned just feeling overwhelmed, especially at school, and was just having trouble sleeping. It was also around this time that Ellen had contacted her parents and asked to move back home to Harrisburg. Now, obviously, they found this really strange, really odd, considering she was about to get married just in a few months. But Ellen assured them that it had nothing to do with her fiance, Sam, and that she just wanted to come home.
So how far away was she living from her parents then?
She was in Philadelphia, so about, I think it was 2 hours away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's not a huge drive to still see her fiance.
Right.
Okay.
Right. In fact, her father, Joshua, Josh, says that at no time did she complain about anyone or anything. She just asked to come home. At this point, it was when her family started kind of urging her to speak with somebody, a psychiatrist that her mom knew, I believe. And Ellen met with Dr. Ellen Berman of Marion Station, Pennsylvania. She had had in all 3 appointments total with Dr. Berman. Dr. Berman said that Ellen felt overwhelmed at work, but there was never any feelings of suicidal thoughts. She also mentioned that Ellen only had good things to say about her fiance, Sam. She recalled that Ellen even smiled when she spoke about him. And when there was questions about abuse of any kind, Ellen denied any kind of verbal or physical abuse. Does that mean it wasn't going on? No, but, you know. By the way she talked, there wasn't.
Right. And I kind of feel like if there was a lot of abuse going on, her wanting to move 2 hours away to her parents would have caused a huge fight between the two of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Dr. Berman also described Ellen as having extreme anxiety and prescribed her Klonopin, which is an anti-anxiety, and Ambien, which is a sleeping aid. Ellen even began to tell friends and family that this combo seemed to really be helping her out. Like, she seemed like it was starting to help.
Which is good, but those are some serious drugs, man.
Yeah, they are. With some serious side effects.
Yeah.
Ellen's last appointment with Dr. Berman was on January 19th, 2011. Something else that I read that Joshua, Ellen's father, mentioned that he found odd was Ellen was having a hard time making decisions. Like, she would want to talk to Sam before making decisions for herself, like things that normally she would be able to do on her own. But it was like, you know, let me see what he thinks, or let me check in with Sam, which may seem odd, but, like, I don't know if that's too crazy, because I always check in with my significant other for things. But it depends. I guess it just depends on what those decisions were.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a difference in, like, is this a minor decision? Like, do I want to go get my hair cut? Do I want to go get my nails done? What color should I get? Oh, let me ask Sam. Yeah. Versus, do I want to make this major change? Do I want to make this big purchase? Like, those are things that you do usually talk to people about, especially a spouse or a significant other of some sort.
And if she's dealing with all this stress and anxiety, maybe Sam was just her go-to person. Like, maybe this was just, he was the fallback. Like,
there's definitely times I've been so stressed out, I'm like, someone else just make the decision for me.
Yeah. However, of course, some people mentioned that it could have been some controlling behavior, but that's just a theory. January 26, 2011 was an extremely snowy day, and it was said that there was a blizzard that was going to be sweeping in that afternoon or evening. Ellen went to work that day as normal, but school was released early due to the weather. So Ellen left work, stopped at a gas station to fill up her gas tank, and headed home. Now, Ellen, of course, was home. She was doing some wedding planning. We know this much because she was actively texting friends and had talked to her mom around this time as well, you know, talking about the wedding planning.
So is she living in her parents' home at this time?
In an apartment with Sam.
Oh, so she's back.
She never moved. Oh. She just talked about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought she'd already moved back home. No. Okay.
Then at some point that afternoon, Sam, her fiance, came home, and they spent a little bit of time together in their apartment until about 4:45 p.m. when Sam headed out to the gym that was part of their apartment complex. It was like he didn't leave the complex. He just went to the gym there. He was gone for around a half hour or so, and when he gets back, the door to the apartment was locked. Not a big deal. Now, he was able to unlock the doorknob with his key, but when he opened the door, it was still, like, locked from the inside with the swing bar lock, kind of like what you see in hotels.
Yeah.
It was still locked on the inside. So, of course, he's trying to yell into the apartment. He's banging on the door. He's trying to get Ellen's attention to, like, you know, come unlock the door. I need him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's also worth noting that I found conflicting arguments. One source states that the neighbors heard him yelling, but the Philadelphia Inquirer states that neighbors heard him banging on the door, but no other sounds of disturbance.
I mean, that's just a matter of, did you hear the yelling over the TV or just the banging because it echoes through the wall?
Exactly. So he's starting to get frustrated, naturally. I would too.
Yeah.
And it was about this time that Sam started, like, sending Ellen a series of texts. He was trying to call her, but, like, he started sending these texts. And in order, it says, hello, open the door, What are you doing? I'm getting pissed. Hello? You better have an excuse. What the fuck? Ah, just A-H-H-H-H-H. And then finally, you have no idea. And that last one, I'm not sure if it was a, you have no idea how mad or frustrated I am, or you have no idea what I'm going to do to you when I get in there, or like, you have no idea that I'm trying to get into you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that one is a little tricky, because I could definitely see that being a, oh my God, I'm so angry, you have no idea.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So after banging on the door, trying to text Alan, trying to call, whatever, Sam decides to go downstairs and find a security guard to help him get in. However, the security guard, like, tells him, sorry, like, we're not allowed to do that, you know, for obvious reasons. Like, he doesn't know if Sam actually lives there or whatever. Like, they can't just go opening doors.
Yeah, yeah, so, that's valid.
Yeah. Again, worth noting that the security guard mentions that Sam didn't really look like he had been at the gym. He wasn't wearing any kind of gym clothes. And in fact, he was wearing just like regular clothes and boots at the time.
Okay, that is strange.
Yeah. However, it was snowing. And depending on how he had to get back, maybe he changed before leaving the gym. Like, who knows?
But did he have like gym clothes with him?
I think he had a duffel bag.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
But I guess if it's in the complex, would you need to change before going back up to your room? Like, wouldn't you go up and shower?
Well, I would assume, but like, the only thing I can think of is like, if it's on the other side, like you have to like walk outside to get to your building.
That's true.
Maybe it was cold. Like, he just didn't want to go out there in the snow dressed in gym clothes.
Yeah.
That's my best guess. But anyway, Sam gets back to the apartment and he just decides to break in past the slot and dart. Bar lock. It doesn't take much. Like, you can just, typically they're just screwed into the wall and you can just kind of
pop them right out.
What's funny is Sam tells police that the security guard was present as he broke down the door. However, the security guard tells police that he never actually left his post. And he said, quote, I felt real bad because I could have let him in, but the policy is that we don't do that.
Wait, how would the security guard have been able to undo the swing lock, though, from the outside? That doesn't seem like something a security guard would have the know-how to.
Well, maybe it was just unlock? Maybe it was a matter of, maybe he had to break down the door and he's like, well, I'm not doing that.
Oh.
You know? And, I mean, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but, like, it's not that hard to unlock it.
Oh, from,
yeah. The outside. Like, you could probably get it done. So when Sam finally does get into the apartment, he finds 27-year-old Ellen dead in the kitchen.
Oh.
She was sitting in an upright position, slouched against like the lower cabinets. And strangely enough, Sam's first thought wasn't to call 911.
Okay, that always is the biggest red flag to me.
Yeah, that's what I would think. He actually made two phone calls first. The first was allegedly to his uncle, who just so happened to have connections in the judicial system. And the second call was to his parents. After that, he then calls 911 finally at 6:33 p.m. It had already been an hour since Sam had been trying to get into the apartment at this point. And here's a recording of the 911 call.
I just walked into my apartment. My fiance is on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come. Help.
4601
Flat Rock Road.
Is this a house or apartment?
Oh, no. It's an apartment.
What apartment number?
603.
Apartment 603?
603. Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's...
No. So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. There's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't
Ellie!
See where the blood's coming from?
I think her head. I think she hit her head, I think. But it's up everywhere.
Okay,
it's everywhere.
Think she might have fallen? Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
Philadelphia Fire Department 842. What's the address? No,
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please hurry.
4601 Flat Rock?
Yes.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now just on the floor with blood. She's not responding.
Okay. Is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down and I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back.
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her
phone. Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off.
Oh, shit.
Okay. She needs to kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Allie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you
okay, I'm trying not to. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
oh, my
off.
God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't, if the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is someone coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, or what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area?
It's in her chest. It looks like it's right in her heart.
Okay, someone's on the way out there. Okay, just get.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
How old is she?
She's 27.
27, and there's no sign of life at all.
No, please don't be. What?
Bend her under her arm and tell me if she responds to pain.
She's Ellie. She's not. Her hands are still warm. I don't know if that means, but there's blood everywhere. I mean.
I know, but you can't, and the knife is still inside of her. How far? Can you see how far it went in?
It looks pretty deep.
Okay.
It looks three, and it's a long knife.
Don't touch anything.
Yeah, don't touch anything, okay?
I'm not touching anything. I can't believe this, though.
No, wait, it was just you there with her?
We're the only ones here.
And she ran in the door, you said, latched it shut?
No, I went downstairs to work out, mm-hmm. And when I came back up, the door was latched.
Oh.
Like, it was, you know, it was locked from the inside, and I'm yelling, and I saw it
was,
so I'm,
well,
you know,
was
yelling.
Was your house
and
broken into?
No.
So there's no sign of a break-in?
No sign of a break-in at all. I mean, there will be when you get here, because I had to break the latch, but to get in.
Okay, 4601 Flat Rock, and this is a house, right?
It's an apartment. Flat Rock, apartment 603.
Okay, that'll help. Apartment
603. Oh, my God. All right, thank
okay.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Okay, so Kim, I saw you writing a lot of notes.
Oh, I wrote so many notes during that clip. That's what I'm trying to say. I wrote so many notes during that clip. I have so many questions about this 911 call. Okay, this is... Okay, first of all, when he gets put in touch with the rescue, up until she transfers him to rescue, mm-hmm. I don't have a very hard time believing him.
Mm.
It sounds like a typical 911 call. He's panicked. He doesn't know what happened. He's trying to come up with theories.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they transfer him to rescue, why does he go into the whole story of, I went down to work out, I came back up, she wouldn't open the door, before just saying, my fiance is bleeding, please come help us? Mm-hmm. Why was he establishing that timeline already?
Well, here's another interesting fact, and it's in here somewhere, I have to get to it. But also when he talked to the security guard,
mm-hmm.
the security guard said that he seemed to make a point that he had been to the gym a few times.
Kept telling him that.
Yeah. Now, when I hear the call, it sounds like, okay, maybe he was talking to the first person and was told them, like, the main stuff, and then, like, maybe it switched over, and it's like he thought of all this other stuff. I don't know.
Calmed himself down, maybe a little?
Maybe. I'm trying to look at both sides here.
So my next question was, when he, okay, first of all, I have so many guys, I'm trying to form cohesive thoughts here. So why would he not be able to see a knife sticking out of her chest until he removed her shirt? Are you telling me that either someone else or she herself stabbed herself in the heart and then zipped a shirt up over the knife handle? And then for some reason he couldn't see the knife handle under the shirt protruding out?
That's a good question. My best guess to that is, I mean, she is leaning up against the counters, but she is slouched over.
Okay.
Maybe he hasn't gone that far yet.
Okay.
And she is in a hoodie. It's like a zip-up hoodie, as far as I could understand.
Okay. Okay. I can go with that.
Okay.
Especially if it's a little oversized. Yeah. It could kind of wrinkle and fold and hide it. I mean,
she's like in sweatpants, Ugg boots. Like, she's dressed to be at home during the winter.
Right. Time. Okay. Why does he then immediately go to, oh my God, she stabbed herself?
Now, that was a question I also had.
That would never be my first thought. If I come across my husband with a knife sticking out of his chest, I don't care if my door was locked from the inside.
She has been stabbed.
Someone stabbed him. He's been stabbed. Yep. Not, oh my God, he stabbed himself.
Yeah, exactly.
So that one's throwing up some red flags for me. And then my last question was, he seems to suddenly pull himself together and become a lot calmer after he finds the knife in her chest.
I did notice that.
Suddenly he was able to talk and not freak out anymore and was like, oh, okay, it's cool. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
At that point, I would be panicking harder.
Yeah.
Like,
is the killer still in the house?
Right. Did somebody stab her? Are they still in my house? The door was locked. Do I need to go check? Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, someone's done this to her. Or even if he really thought that she did it to herself, I'm going to be panicking, thinking, oh my God, my spouse is dead, or fiance.
Yeah.
Like, they were so depressed they killed. I'm going to be in hysterics. I'm not going to calm down after that.
Right.
Which, everybody reacts differently. I know we've said it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And but this in particular is really bugging me here.
And that's what I've been trying to keep that in mind as I go along through this. People do act differently. I'm trying to look at both sides. And I really don't know how I feel about Sam one way or the other. I really don't.
Plus with him calling his parents first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I could see some panic reactions. Like, my parents live within shouting distance.
Yeah.
So if there was an emergency, I could definitely see myself running to shout for them. And yeah. Then calling 911, but to make a whole phone call before I called for help for my fiance.
And allegedly two phone calls.
Two phone calls. No, I need to get them help now.
Right. Another thing I wanted to point out that I didn't really pay attention to until the second or third time I listened to it is when she says, can you tell how far it's in her chest or something like that? He goes, it's about 3. It's in there pretty deep or something like that. Almost like he maybe knew.
My only thought on that is if it was a knife from their kitchen, he could recognize it. Yeah. Like, this is a big knife that's in her chest.
I don't know how many inches my knives are.
No, I don't either.
And I honestly could not tell you without looking at my thumb and trying to measure it about how many inches it's in a chest.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be some serious math. Maybe, look, maybe he knows. I'm just saying it sounded strange to me.
Maybe he was guessing, or that one almost kind of sounds like to me, as a hairdresser, I can chart you out an inch down to the millimeter right now, just drawing it on a piece of paper.
That's fair.
I know how long an inch is. So it's possible he's not as experienced with measurements.
Yeah.
And his first thought is, oh, that's a long knife. Maybe 3 inches. No, I don't know how. It's deep. It's real deep.
Yeah.
So maybe he was trying to guess first and then went into, I don't know, really. It's just really far.
Yeah, that's fair. I just heard it. Now, I've seen some sources say that Sam didn't want to do CPR. But it doesn't necessarily sound like he doesn't want to do CPR. It's more like I'm going to have to, right? Like, duh.
Yeah, like, I don't have another choice, guys. Yeah. That's what he says, right? Like, I don't really have a choice here.
Yeah, he says, like, well, I guess I have to, right? Like, I don't feel like it's a, do I have to? I feel like it's more of a, well, yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, like I don't have another option, do I? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't have a direction.
Right. Also, there are some sources that say this call sounded rehearsed. And you kind of made a point to say, like, he sounded more calm and put together the second half of the call, which I can see. It's just still, it's a lot to unpack.
I was feeling okay about Sam until I heard that 911 call, which a million times people react differently.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't calm. Maybe he was going into shock more.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's just kind of sinking in, like, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that this 911 call made me decide that Sam is guilty.
Yeah.
But it's just
strange.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah.
There were some things that really stood out to me.
Yeah. So, fire medics arrive and announce death at 6:40 p.m. Now, it was Sam's father who actually contacted Ellen's parents because, you know, they're in Harrisburg. He told them, quote, something terrible has happened. And Sandy, Ellen's mother, said that, quote, all I know is my world went dark and I have no daughter.
Oh.
And if that wasn't heartbreaking enough, I mean, Sandy and Joshua were 2 hours away from Ellen's home and they couldn't even get there that night due to the snow.
Oh, that's even worse.
Mm-hmm. So they had to just know what happened. So police arrived shortly after. And when they find Ellen's body, she was found, like I said, sitting up and leaned against the bottom kitchen counters, slouched over.
Wait, I thought he was supposed to lay her out before he tried to get the shirt off. Had he not done that?
I don't know. This is how they found her, though. This is part of the investigation report.
Because didn't they say you need to lay her on the floor and take her shirt off? Maybe he just tried to take the shirt off.
Maybe he just tried to take it. Because it sounds like
sitting up probably would be easier.
That may have been what happened. The investigation also says that she was wearing a dark colored zipper top over a t-shirt, like I said, gray sweatpants, Ugg boots. There was a pair of eyeglasses on the floor to the right of her body, like around near her hand, and a hair tie on the right wrist, which could have been like a scrunchie, I think. A few times it said scrunchie. She was also holding a white towel in her left hand, which was not covered in blood.
That's strange.
Mm-hmm. There were no other personal effects on her. The knife that he saw was embedded in her chest, which the blade was about 12 and a half centimeters long, I think is about 4 inches, and 1.5 centimeters wide. So just like a regular, like, steak knife, kitchen knife.
Yeah.
There were multiple stab wounds, totaling approximately 20 in her chest, stomach, neck, and head.
Wow.
Yep. 8 to the chest, 10 to the back of the neck, 1 to the abdomen, and 1 to the scalp, which, if you look at the crime scene photos, it's not the crime scene photos, like autopsy report photos. It's a large gash on the right side of her head, which I believe penetrated to the brain. I could be wrong about that one.
And she managed to continue stabbing herself after even a few of these?
Oh, boy, are we going to get into that.
Oh, man, I'm going to get real mad, aren't I?
I think so. Now, 2 of these wounds had gone directly into the brain. There were also injuries to the aortic arch, which is the main artery of the heart that carries blood away from the heart, which is probably the main chest wound. The left upper long lobe and spinal cord at the C2, C3 section, which is, it was called the liver and dorsal cervical spinal cord, which is closest to the brain.
But physically, okay, we'll get there.
She also had about 11 bruises along the right side of her body that was found by the medical team. These were found along the arm, stomach, and leg. These bruises were said to have been at, quote, various stages of resolution or healing stages, which means they all weren't at the same time. There was 1 on the right upper arm, 3 on the right forearm, 1 on the right lower abdomen, 1 on the right thigh in like a vertical row, and 3 above the right knee.
Okay, so that's just all bruises she had before.
Yes. Well, it says it's at various stages, so yes.
Okay.
Just some bruises on her body. It was also said that these bruises could have come from playing like a close contact sport, simply bumping into things, or like from a closed fist. And all I'm saying is that no one She was not known for, like, playing close contact sports. Maybe she was bumping into things. Like, I'm really notorious for that. But, like, all on the right side.
They're all on her right side? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right.
Maybe she had a fall of some kind. But, like, these are all bruises at various stages, like, of healing.
Now, I will have to say this. At any given moment, I could probably right now find at least 6 bruises on my body that I could not tell you where they came
absolutely.
From.
Absolutely. And that's my first thought. Like, maybe she was just bumping into things a lot. Especially, I don't know if it's like a teacher thing. That's not what I want to say. But, like, I know, like, as I'm walking around with kids and stuff all day, like, I'm constantly running into stuff.
Yeah.
Constantly. But that's also me as a person.
But also, so, the fact that they're all on her right side, it does make it a little weirder.
That is strange. They also found no defensive wounds to her body.
So she didn't try to defend herself from this attack?
As far as they could tell, no.
Okay.
There was blood found on her head, on the front side of her shirts, along the pants on the front side, her right fist, and on top of both of her boots. The right boot also had some blood on it on the bottom, on the sole of it. And the blood was, quote, generally confined to the area of the body, on the floor underneath, on the cabinets behind her, and 2 drops on the granite countertop above her.
So she was not moving around.
That's what it looks like, yes.
Okay.
Now, as far as evidence, per the investigation report, police found the apartment in order. It was clean. There's no evidence of a forced entry in the home, aside from the broken lock that Sam admitted to having to break into to get the door open. There was also no sign of struggle and nothing missing in the home. The only other exit in the home was a sliding glass patio that was also locked, and their apartment was 6 stories up, so, like,
not really any place to go.
Right.
Okay.
There was also no footprints or tracks in the snow below, so, I mean, it was highly unlikely somebody would have come in that way anyway. They found the knife block turned over on its side on the counter, and 2 of the knives on the counter that were clean. The knife found in her chest matched that set, so it's from her kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It's theirs. There was also a bowl of fruit on the counter, as if Ellen had been in the middle of, like, preparing a bowl of fruit salad to eat. Now, police did not find a note or any kind of searches of suicide on the computer. Like, she did not leave a suicide note if this was a suicide, nor did they find any searches of suicide when they looked. They found her medications on the side table next to her bed, alprazolam, which is Xanax, clonazepam, which is Klonopin, and Zolpidem, which is Ambien. They also found a small notebook in Ellen's purse that seems to be, like, a type of journal she used when taking her medications, and, like, she would write down the state of her mind during the time she takes them. And that last journal entry was on 1/16. The police take in the medications and the journal as evidence, leaving the knife in Ellen's chest to transport to autopsy. So, like, they just left it. They take photographs, they interview, like, the neighbors around, and then they leave. So, they interview the neighbors. Of course, they say they didn't hear any other disturbances other than Sam banging on the door. They never heard any yelling or any other kinds of noises. They interview Sam. He tells them what happened. Sam's story did line up with what he said about going to the gym. They had fob records and the times, and it matched up to what he said.
Okay. That's making me feel a little better about Sam.
Police said that when Sam was interviewed, he was pretty cooperative. He told him everything, and then, of course, they let him go. After this, he immediately gets an attorney and kind of shuts up, which I know might seem a little, but it's the smartest thing he could have done.
Absolutely.
Always, always.
Always get the attorney, whether you did it or not.
Exactly. Ellen's parents were interviewed the next morning. Sandy, her mom, said that she actually spoke to Ellen that morning at 7 a.m. when they were both on their way to work. Said that they had a pleasant conversation. Ellen gave no indication that there was anything imminently wrong. She also mentioned to the police about Ellen's issues with anxiety, talking to a psychiatrist, you know, just trying to give them information.
Mm-hmm.
Said that Ellen only ever had good things to say about Sam. Said they had no reservations about him. Described him as a, quote, fun young man. And they had no prior knowledge of verbal or physical abuse. She also denied any previous suicide attempts or suicidal behavior. The investigation report reads, quote, the incident is a surprise to them despite her issues with anxiety. Which, why is suicide already kind of being thought up at this point?
Yeah.
But we know what happens. They also interview Dr. Berman, which was Ellen's psychiatrist. The investigation report noted that Berman was upset at hearing about Ellen's death. She told police that she only saw Ellen only those three times, and her next appointment was on 127, which is the day after she died. Dr. Berman told police about her anxiety, presented initially as having severe anxiety for 2 months. She believed that Ellen was having difficulty at work. She mentioned that she was doing well, but like the school district changed some regulations and she was starting to feel overwhelmed. She was having some issues with difficult students and was like trying to figure out if she wanted to like work through it or quit. So she was having some anxiety about work.
That's valid. Work is like 70% of your life, yeah. Honestly. If you're having trouble at work, it's going to really affect you.
Yeah. She told police that she was working with Ellen on a treatment plan to help with her anxiety. She said that Ellen had tried Zoloft at first, didn't like it, didn't work, whatever. The switch to a low dose of Xanax, again, that didn't really help. So she switched her to Klonopin and Ambien to help with sleep. And again, Ellen mentioned that, you know, that seemed to be working for her when she talked to friends and family. Dr. Berman also mentioned that Ellen had shown no signs of abuse with medication, which, I mean, I'm sure if she had, they would have had some notes of it with other doctors.
Most psychiatrist's office will actually have you do a drug test when you come in for your appointments. Now, I don't know if that's something they did back in 2011, but I do know that most of them will do that. They do a drug test to make sure that you are taking your prescriptions the way you should be, that you're taking them at all and not selling them. Mm-hmm. It's pretty standard as far as I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, even the toxicology report showed that like there were just trace amounts of the medication. So it wasn't like she was abusing them.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it. Dr. Berman also mentioned that Ellen spoke really highly of Sam, mentioned they were getting married, smiled when she spoke about him, and that Ellen denied any sort of physical or verbal abuse. So like she didn't have anything to worry about. And Dr. Berman specifically told them, like, I do not think that she had any suicidal tendencies. Like she was not worried about suicide with Ellen.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the suicide thing, because again, we know where this is going. So while the medications Ellen was on has side effects of thoughts or ideations of suicide, it didn't really seem like she was abusing them. Like I said, the toxicology report even shows trace amounts in her body. So it doesn't even seem like she had just taken them either. Another strange thing is that stabbing is a really weird way to kill yourself these days.
It really is. And the amount of times that she was stabbed is also very strange to me. Like,
yeah.
How do you continue stabbing yourself after you've been stabbed in the brain multiple times in the spinal cord? Like, how is she able to keep going?
Well, and I've always heard that, like, even a chest, like, heart stabbing is, like, personal, right? Like, that,
yeah.
That's such a weird... There's so many... don't really want to say it that way. There's other ways to commit suicide than stabbing yourself.
Right. And also the fact that she was, like, fixing herself a meal and just randomly decided, like, this is it. This is the time.
This is the moment. Also, typically, if someone stabs themselves, they're more likely to lift up their clothes to do it. Ellen's stab wounds were through her clothes.
Except not her jacket, right?
No, it went through the clothes.
So then the knife was not hidden under the jacket when Sam found
her? No, it was probably like stuck in the zipper or something.
Oh, like maybe in between the folds of the jacket so he couldn't see it. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Also, there were all these other things that she'd been working on. I mean, she literally just sent out save the dates to her wedding. She just filled her car up with gas before she got home. Like, she visited her mother just 2 weeks before and had stated that, like, you know, everything was normal, except mentioning that, you know, just normal work stress about the wedding, her job. She was even planning Sam's birthday that was coming up. She had made reservations and even, like, bought gifts for it. In fact, there's a call that day to what I believe is probably the restaurant, but they couldn't say whether she was, like, checking on a reservation or canceling or something. They couldn't get a hold of that information.
Mm.
But that was even one of the calls that she had made. And I know that that's not always indications that someone's not going to kill themselves. But after all of that, like all this planning, no one had any indications that she was suicidal, even her own psychiatrist. It's just strange.
Right.
Now, the official autopsy was done on the next day. Most of this we already discussed, but I want to point out how extremely hard it would be to just stab yourself after already inflicting all these wounds to your body. Like the strength you would have to even just put the knife through your chest, like the pressure you would have to have.
Right. That is so hard. And with a, like a kitchen knife, those are not sharp.
Well, and then you also have the chest plate, like that's bone.
Yeah.
Like after that's, already stabbing yourself that many times.
That's some drive
to
get that in there.
Now, initially, the autopsy was ruled as a homicide because it looks like a homicide. So, of course, the police are now having to go back and investigate this as a homicide. However, only 2 days later, they tell reporters that they are still leaning towards suicide and they don't mention to the public about the medical examiner's finding and that it was ruled a homicide to begin with. Police are starting to focus on the fact that Ellen had anxiety and the idea that the only DNA found on the knife was Ellen's. You know, the knife that's hers.
Right.
So one of the detectives working on the case, and sorry, I forgot his name, decides to enlist the help of a neuropathologist to test a piece of Ellen's spinal cord to see if it had been severed during the stabbing. Now, the thought behind this was that this C2, C3 spinal cord was closest to the brain. If it had been severed, then Ellen would not have had the strength to stab herself in the chest.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Lucy Rourke, who is a well-respected neuropathologist, apparently, tested the spinal cord and determined that it had not been severed, but it had been punctured. And in her opinion, Ellen would have gone numb and would have been able to inflict the rest of the stab wounds to herself. But my question is, like, wouldn't her arms be numb as well?
I mean, maybe, but I guess I feel like for me personally, if I suddenly was numb and I couldn't feel the pain from the stabbing anymore, like that would just be encouragement to just
keep on,
finish it off.
Yeah.
I can't feel it now anyway. That's like best case scenario.
That's true. But like you have to really get lucky there. Anyway, now 3 months after the medical examiner listed Ellen's death as a homicide, they then change it to suicide officially. And they also list Dr. Rourke's findings in the report. And Ellen's parents weren't even notified. They found that out through the media.
Oh, that's shitty.
Yeah. Now, of course, Ellen's parents are like furious. They don't believe it was a suicide and they intend to work on the case themselves. So they go and purchase copies of the autopsy report, the crime scene photos, and the investigation report. And they send all this info to a man named Dr. Cyril Wecht, who is a very well-known pathologist and has actually worked on parts of different cases, such as the JFK assassination and the JonBenet Ramsey case. He's, you can literally look him up. He's really famous. He had many concerns with Ellen's death, specifically about the number of stab wounds that were in the back of her neck. He was quoted as saying, "I don't understand how they wrote this off as a suicide." And in his January 2012 report, labeled it as, quote, "strongly suspicious of homicide." His report also mentioned things such as suicide rarely has multiple wounds and becoming less frequent, and the fact that stabbing is becoming less frequent and stab wounds to the back are unlikely to be suicide.
It's like all of our cases where the victim is shot in the back of the head and they're like, yep, totally suicide.
Killed himself. Isn't that weird? Murder typically involves multiple stab wounds to the side, back, or stomach. Suicide victims typically leave some kind of note or indication of being suicidal. Of course, there was no note or suicidal tendencies. He also mentions that Ellen spoke with her mother that morning and even texted friends around noon about being able to leave work early. He does mention being curious about how Sam saw her behaving since he was the last to see her alive a half an hour before.
That does seem like a very short amount of time to go from being okay to stabbing yourself that many times.
Yeah. However, I did not find an answer to that. So, and of course, he mentions the stab wounds going through the clothing, whereas someone attempting a suicide would often lift their clothes up. Now that they have Cyril Wecht's report, they hire civil rights lawyer Larry Krasner to try to reopen Ellen's case. That was a no-go. They then get help from former Attorney General Walter Cohen to file a public records request to review all the documents of the case. Now, after being originally denied, Cohen keeps at it until they finally just agree to let the family view the records. However, The family was not allowed to make copies. They could not take pictures of these records, and they could not have their lawyer present to view these records. So the Greenbergs had no idea what they were reading, what they were looking for.
That is some serious rules about that.
A little weird.
Could they take notes? I'd be writing everything
down.
Oh,
I would be too. I'm assuming maybe that they could, but like they couldn't. They didn't have copies of any, like, they didn't even know what they were looking for.
Right.
It was just all a bunch of mumbo jumbo to them. They then hired Detective Tom Brennan to help with the case. After reviewing the medical examiner's reports and the crime scene photos, Brennan stated that the lack of defensive wounds does not always mean a suicide. It could have been something called a blitz attack, where the victim didn't have time to react or defend themselves, especially if the stab wounds are in the back. She could have had her back, she could have been sitting over the sink making fruit salad.
And what if that stab to the vertebrae came first? She went numb.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't know how to react. She thought she was paralyzed. I mean, who knows?
Who knows? Something else that Detective Brennan noticed was a stream of blood in the crime scene photos. Now, this stream of dried blood running horizontally across her cheek from her nose to her left ear was odd to him.
It's odd to me, too.
Mm-hmm. That apparently it defies the laws of gravity because she's supposedly sitting upright. He states that if Ellen stabbed herself and slid down the cabinets, as police said, and her body was never moved, then how did the blood run that way on her face?
Now, she was facing away from the cabinets, like back to the cabinets,
back to
right?
the cabinets.
Did she turn around and stab herself? Why would she bother turning around the other direction?
That I don't know.
I would feel like if I'm suddenly going to snap and start stabbing myself, why bother turning around first? I'd just start doing it.
Just start doing it, right? Yeah, great question. Another detective, Guy D'Andrea, he was working at the DA's office when he started looking into this, just kind of based off the suggestion of a friend who was, I guess, probably curious. But he also questions that bloodstream. He starts to look into the pathology report from Dr. Lucy Rourke. When he looks for it, it's nowhere to be found. Just a simple line in the medical examiner's report that states, note, neuropathologist Dr. Lucy Rourke examined the spinal cord and concluded there was no defect on the spinal cord. So, of course, he requests a copy of that report from the medical examiner's office, but they said it either was lost or it never existed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they couldn't even find an invoice for them, like, contracting this pathologist help. So, like, they couldn't even find an invoice for it.
So they're saying that she weighed in here, but they have no record of her actually weighing in?
Right.
So did she?
Well, he contacted Rourke. And by that time, like, I think she had retired in 2011, like, maybe later that year or whatever. But she did confirm that she did contract work from that medical examiner's office in 2011. But she didn't have a report or a bill of service for the case. In an email she sends to him, she states, quote, I would conclude that I did not see the specimen in question, although there is a remote possibility that it was shown to me. However, I have no recollection of this case.
Hmm. Remember that phone call he made to the uncle who supposedly had those connections?
Just saying. It's starting to look real weird.
Yeah.
Luckily enough, Detective Brennan just happens to discover that there's another piece of Ellen's spinal cord that was still at the medical examiner's office 6 years later. Actually, it was D'Andrea that found it, but like Brennan was the one who was working on it.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Just in the office, like, just stayed there without her body. They just kept part of the spinal cord.
Just hanging out.
Is that normal?
I don't work in a medical examiner's office, but it doesn't seem like it would be normal. Not 6 years later.
Better hold on to this after we already ruled it a suicide and we already have all the answers we need, I guess.
I guess. D'Andrea just happens to run across this when he was doing work on, like, something else. He just ran across it and happened to see it.
Well, I mean, I'm glad it was there,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. They now enlist the help of another pathologist, thank goodness, Dr. Wayne K. Ross. He focuses on the stab wound on Ellen's head that penetrated the brain and states in his 2017 report that, quote, An injury like that would lead Ellen to have severe pain, cranial nerve dysfunction, and traumatic brain scans, as well as numbness, tingling, and irregular heartbeat. He looks at the spinal cord Brennan sends over and determines that not only had it been pierced, but it had in fact been severed.
Oh.
Yes. Which means, again, if it had been severed, there was no way Ellen could have inflicted at least the wound in her chest for sure. Dr. Ross also finds evidence of scratch marks and fingernail marks near her throat, as well as a hemorrhage near her throat that would have been indicative of a manual strangulation.
Oh.
However, this is just through crime scene photos at this point.
Oh. So. Okay.
Yeah. Brandon and DeAndrea both show concerns about the lack of blood at the scene. There's mention of the towel in Ellen's hand that has no blood on it.
Why would she even be holding a towel if she's... Would she not need both hands to stab herself through the chest anyway?
I would think. And she's left-handed from what I understood.
Hmm.
And they mentioned that there would have been more blood on or around the body based on the wounds that she had. Because think about it. Like, she's hitting pretty big spots.
Yeah. I mean, head wounds bleed so much. Yeah.
And one of those is a huge... Like, it is a huge gash. Almost the size, probably, almost the size of the palm of your hand, maybe. It's pretty big, and it's deep.
I mean, I remember being in middle school, and a girl just, like, bumped her head on the wall and had this tiny little cut over her eyebrow, and blood was dripping down her body.
Yeah.
There was so much.
Yeah, it's really weird. And they both believe that the crime scene and the body have possibly been staged.
Mm.
Another detective, Scott Ilman, who was contracted by Dr. Ross, reviewed the scene photos and said that there was a trail of blood that would have been consistent with the body being moved.
Where?
I could not find where.
Huh.
Maybe it was in the kitchen, because like that's all the crime scene photos they had. They didn't take pictures of like the refrigerator, like all of the kitchen. It was just where she was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe trail is in, like, you know, she was laying down and they then sat her up.
Maybe.
If that's all they had to work with.
Yeah. Also mentioned the blood on her face was inconsistent with her sitting against the cabinets and that she had possibly been moved several times before being put against the cabinets. It's also worth noting that there had been no luminol testing that was done at the crime scene. So there's no telling if there had actually been blood that had been cleaned up prior to police arriving.
How do detectives come into a crime scene where someone has been stabbed multiple times, whether there was a lock on the inside of the door or not,
yeah,
and just not test anything?
I don't know in this case. I mean, I can't say one way or the other, but there are cases where cops are just like, suicide is a lot less paperwork.
Yep. I mean, or maybe somebody said, hey guys, this one's probably a suicide, wink, wink.
Yeah, that's that too. Who knows? Henry Lee, who had the photo submitted to his institute, also says that, quote, the number and types of wounds and bloodstain patterns observed are consistent to a homicide scene. So you have all of these doctors and detectives and lawyers and experts, like, they're looking at just the photos and saying, yep, this is a homicide. But the ones originally on her case immediately declare suicide. Like, that's weird.
I feel like it's either cover up or just lazy police work.
I still don't know about cover up. Like, well, I don't know, but there's been plenty of lazy police work before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it sounds a lot like that, unfortunately. But I don't know.
Like, I can see how all of the circumstances could lead you to believe, like, no one else could have been in this apartment with her.
Right. To their defense, I mean, the door was locked from the inside. There's no other way to get in except for that balcony, and it's six stories up. The only other DNA is hers. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's already so many other things. It's like, how could that possibly be a suicide? How could she do that to herself? It's weird.
And I keep coming back to, Sam did not break into the apartment until he had been locked out for a full hour, right?
Yeah.
But he also said her hands were warm. Do we have a time of death?
Not an official one.
Okay.
At 6:40 was declaration of death when the medics were there.
Okay.
So, like in the investigation report, I believe, it says that her fingers were cold, but like her arms and stuff were still warm. So, like, is it rigor? rigor was starting to kind of set in, but like it hadn't been that long because it only takes like what, an hour or two?
Yeah. And if he'd been outside trying to get in for an hour, like if
maybe
he,
more of her would have been
maybe older? She could have been saved. Like, I don't know. Was she already dead? I don't know. Maybe not if she'd been stabbed in the lots of places. But it's just that I feel like if my husband knew I was inside and he came to try and get in and he's yelling for me and he's banging on the door and he's texting me and I'm not answering, he is not going to wait an hour before he breaks into that apartment. No. Because he's immediately going to go to something is wrong.
Right.
Within 10 minutes, he's going to be trying to get in that apartment. It doesn't matter if he has to break down the door or not. Security guard helping or not. Well, he's going to get in to check on me.
Yeah. He wouldn't have gone down to the security guard for sure. He would have just done it himself.
Yeah. If I'm not answering in any capacity, he's going to come find out what's wrong.
Right.
So why did it take him an hour to do that? What did he think was happening in there for an hour that she wasn't answering?
I don't know. Sam said that he was able to get in just by using force, breaking that lock in. When Detective Brennan reviewed the crime scene photos, he sees that the lock was still partially intact. It was like hanging on by one screw into the wall. Brennan believes that if Sam had actually used force to break open that door, the entire lock would have come off the wall. And
how did it open if it didn't come off the wall?
Well, see, you've got the...
Now, is this like a swing chain lock?
No.
Is this one
it's
of the
bar?
Okay.
It goes on the ball. So usually the bar part is attached to the wall and then the ball is on the door.
Okay.
So he believes like if Sam had actually used force to break open the door, the entire lock would have come off the wall. Not only that, but unlocking a swing bar lock from the outside, it isn't that hard. You can even look it up, like, on the internet, how to do it, how to unlock it, and even lock it back with the door partially shut.
Yeah, you just need some kind of small enough thing to flip it around before you shut the door all the way.
And there's a lot of times when sometimes you can even, like, use your hands.
Yeah.
You just use your fingers. So the Greenbergs have tried countless times to have their daughter's case reopened, but each time they've been denied. The Attorney General released a statement that said, quote, "The investigation they've done is a thorough one." And then referenced that Ellen's laptop had searches for terms including suicide methods, painless suicide, and quick suicide methods.
None of those match up to what happened to her, though. I mean, besides suicide method, but it definitely was not quick or painless, right. I would say.
I wouldn't say so. But here's the thing. If you remember, the investigation report says that police found none of those terms on her laptop.
I also remember that, yeah.
And the Greenbergs were told this as well. And there's also no new notes in the report about it.
Hmm.
However, now they're saying that this report was made by the Regional Computer Forensics Laboratory and given to the police on April 11th, 2011. And, I mean, like, even the autopsy says, analysis of the decedent's laptop provided no additional information. So when the Attorney General was questioned about it, he says that his office wasn't the one to find it and that, quote, "We cannot say if any one police or prosecutor ever looked at it."
Okay.
You know.
Oh, it was there. They just probably didn't see it.
Yeah.
Totally.
Now, on October 19th, 2019, Ellen's parents filed a civil lawsuit against the medical examiner Marlon Osborne and the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office to have the word suicide removed from Ellen's cause of death and at least have undetermined or possibly homicide added. An attorney working for them, Joe Pedraza, stated that, quote, "Under Pennsylvania law, the determination of the manner of death is always open to reconsideration based on new evidence. And in this case, you can see there is considerable new evidence." Now, just last year in 2021, Pedraza has also presented new forensic evidence that seemingly proves that Ellen could not have stabbed herself 20 times.
Well, yeah, I feel like we've always known that, but okay.
You know.
Only took 10 years to come to that conclusion.
There is a process called photogrammetry that creates 3D information from photographs, in this case, the crime scene photos and the autopsy photos of Ellen. They were able to use this to show Ellen's wounds and how the knife would have entered each wound.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Pedraza states that the evidence shows that it was highly improbable that Ellen could have wounded herself the way they say she did from behind because it just didn't have the force necessary to do it.
I don't know how strong Ellen was, but like, I am not a strong person.
Yeah.
There is no way I could push a knife through my breastbone, let alone through my spine behind my head, trying to push from that direction. Yeah. Or through my skull. I could not do it.
You're already biologically unable to do that. Like, your body, like, stops you from doing that. Like, you can do it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you have to build up to it.
Yeah. So, like, it would be really hard for her to do that. And then 20 times?
And I've seen people argue for this case that, oh, well, a lot of those stab wounds were hesitation marks. Okay, but, like, even if only 4 of them were not hesitation marks, that's still stabbing yourself in the neck, through the brain, and through the heart. That's a lot.
And one of these doctors, I mean, we've been through a lot of people, I know, mentioned, like, when someone commits or attempts suicide, like, there are marks on the arms or something as, like, a test to see if they can deal with the pain. That's a lot of times. It doesn't always happen, but... And she didn't have that.
Yeah.
It was all just...
Stab, stab, stab.
Stab, stab, stab. The family also had a forensic analysis done on Ellen's computer on the hard drive, and they say it proves that Ellen never made those searches or anything related to suicide.
Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, this evidence was sent again to the Attorney General in January of 2021, and the Attorney General released a statement that said, quote, "Our hearts go out to the Greenberg family on the anniversary of Ellen's traumatic death. At the urging of the family and following a conflict referral from the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office in 2018, our office reviewed the case and conducted an extensive investigation that did not uncover evidence to change the medical examiner's finding on suicide. There is no statute of limitations on homicide, however, and if any new evidence is brought forward, we believe it should be reviewed with the proper authorities. At this time, no such information has been shared with our office."
Okay. Okay.
How freaking condescending is that, by the way?
Like, we're intentionally not looking at this. That's what he's saying. We are pretending that none of this is happening.
Yeah, that's how I read it, too. But as of August of this year, there was an article that said the case is finally being reopened and reviewed by the Chester County District's Attorney's Office.
Oh, good.
Pedraza states, "I'm ecstatic. I think for the first time we might get an objective assessment of the case with somebody who will honestly look at it. He is confident that the new evidence, along with info from a deposition from the medical examiner's office, should be enough to finally get the ruling changed. And if they can get it changed to homicide, maybe they can finally look at it as a homicide.
And do those investigations that should have been done years 11 ago.
11 years ago, yeah. But, you know, I'm glad that the family's finally getting closer to what they've been looking for 11 years. And I hope that they finally get some answers for Ellen's death. Now, of course, in all cases like this, we always look to the significant other. It's always the husband, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. Like, I cannot... There are times when I look at it and go, no, there's no way he did it. Like, he did it. But this one, I struggle with it. I don't know. I really don't. But some believe that Sam Goldberg's family ties could have led to a cover-up, like you had mentioned earlier. Sam's uncle, who he supposedly called before 911, is a judge and sits as a chair of the Ethics and Responsibility Group and was also appointed by the governor to the Court of Judicial Discipline in 2018. And here's the thing. Sam does have a criminal record, but it's like traffic violations and like a charge of providing liquor to minors. There's also a time where a landlord evicted him and like tried to bring like non-civil judgments against him, but nothing major. Now, does that make not a killer? No, but he doesn't have like a history of like abuse or violence.
I mean, you would think that if you're willing to go that far to kill somebody in one relationship, would there not be evidence before or since?
Right.
Maybe he's better at hiding it now. Maybe. I don't know. But so many of these husbands or wives that get caught killing their spouses, they've done it before.
Yeah. Or in some form or fashion, like violence or just abuse, whatever. Like,
right.
Before it leads up to death. But he doesn't have that. And if you're curious, he's now married with children and living somewhere else.
Oh, that one's tough because I have so many suspicions about Sam, but at the same time, I don't know that I could say, yeah, just based on this, he's the one who totally did it.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that's what happened.
Yeah.
Somebody could have snuck in there and killed her and left, put the latch on the door, and that's that.
So there actually were cameras throughout the apartment complex, and they didn't find anyone weird, like walking through the complex, no one up there at that time.
No one went in or out of her room or her apartment?
The only thing they said was it was Sam that they saw at the door.
Which could only lead me to the conclusion that if she didn't kill herself and no one else went in the apartment, I mean...
Yeah.
I don't want to say, yeah, Sam killed her, but, like, there's not a ton of options.
She either killed herself or Sam killed her. But I don't know.
I mean, unless somebody snuck up the side, climbed up the side of a 6-story building, left no footprints in the snow, broke in through a locked sliding door...
It was Spider-Man.
Without a trace. Like,
I mean, at that point, it's Spider-Man. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I just hope they find some answers.
Me too. That is exactly what I was about to say. Like, I really hope this new investigation comes up with a more satisfying answer. Even if we don't have the who and why, maybe we can at least get the, hey, she didn't do this to herself. Yeah.
It just gives that family some closure. Thanks for listening.
Like us on Facebook at True Crimes and Weird Times Podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at True Crimes Weird Times.
Email us your stories at truecrimesweirdtimes@gmail.com.
And if you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review.
Bye.